In the heart of what was once the rugged, unyielding Republic of Texas, Governor Greg Abbott stands a willing participant in the quiet handover of the Lone Star State.
As long as I'm governor of this great state, Texas will be a land for the Indian community, a land for
Abbott's recent directive freezing new H-1B petitions for state agencies and universities now rings hollow.
Governor Abbott made the announcement directing all public universities and state agencies to freeze new H-1B visa applications. Governor Abbott was on the Mark Davis radio show talking about his plan.
What job is it in our public schools in the state of Texas that these H-1B visas personnel are fulfilling that we can't fulfill here in our own public schools? I mean, those are exactly the types of questions that we're looking at.
A superficial gesture after years of courting the very demographic overhaul now transforming Texas suburbs into Little India.
Now, I wanted to come to this area because, as you guys can see behind me, this is a residential area, and you have this very large, very intricate temple that is in this location where you quite frankly would not expect it. And one of the first things I saw when we got here was a huge pile of shoes outside because you cannot wear shoes inside the temple. So you have a lot of people that are walking around this area barefoot. And I actually went inside myself because I wanted to go check it out. And when you get inside, you see people worshiping multiple deities. And the one that did stick out to me was the area where people were going to pray for blessings of health and also for work visas. Now we're in Frisco, Texas, and going back to that changing demographic, back in 2010, you had about 10% Asian or Indian population in this area. That has since surged to over 30%. And on top of that, Texans telling me as well that some of these school districts now primarily are made up of demographically Asian students. So this is one of the ways that the culture is changing up here. You have multiple Hindu temples all over the DFW area.
Multiple H-1B companies registered to single addresses have funneled donations to Frisco, Texas's first Indian mayor.
Take a look at this room of full of concerned citizens. They want you to answer questions about why some of the mayor's biggest donors are Indians that don't live in Frisco. Is it because the mayor's real estate business, or is he being bought out to ignore an Indian takeover? Why are people with multiple H-1B companies registered to one address donating to Frisco's first Indian mayor? We know Fortune 100 companies are employing foreigners on H-1B visas, but why are Indians in Frisco opening up their own businesses tied to H-1B? It's not a coincidence that Frisco Indian population exploded 4,510% and there's potential visa fraud here.
The H-1B program landed in Texas with the 1990 Immigration Act, sold as a narrow fix for specialized skill shortages. What followed was a flood, especially from India, turning tech corridors and booming suburbs into outposts of chain migration and wage arbitrage.
I came here on H-1B 2004. Everybody was Americans. But the fast forward, now so you don't see any Americans.
Where are you from?
Hyderabad.
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 I'm from India.
From India.
Where in India?
Hyderabad?
Why do you think Frisco became such a big hub for Indians?
They have their own community here. Right.
No, it's not like that.
Not like that here in Frisco?
No.
Motherland India or Texas, USA? Oh,
obviously Motherland India.
Obviously Motherland India.
Hyderabad, of course.
Really? Did you come here on H-1B?
Yeah. I'm on H-1B.
H-1B?
Yeah.
You're H-1B?
Yeah.
Working here at 7-Eleven?
Yeah.
We need more or less H-1B people here?
We need a lot less. I have two master's degrees. I was making over $100,000 a year. They said, you're too expensive. We're going to hire Indians.
You know, in looking into some of these companies, I think there may be more than meets the eye. Why not check in and see what we find? This one is TechBits. On the LCA, we've got two 2025 workers on site. I don't think anyone is here at TechBits.
This is colonization. This isn't immigration. The Indian loyalty remains overseas. Cultural enclaves form parallel economies, and American families get priced out or pushed aside. This isn't stewardship. It's selling Texas out. While private sector H-1B abuse rolls on unchecked, the governor's cozy relationship with the Indian community betrays the very people who built Texas. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
I want to make
make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra methylene blue. Blue.
I know. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra methylene blue. 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 I mean, this is just bonker town.
I know. I love it.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra methylene blue. 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 I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it.
This stuff works.
Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
Have you ever been experienced? Well, we have. Let us show you now on the War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. In this final hour, I'll be laying out a timeline of the Iran conflict, the latest flare-up of the Iran conflict. Now that we ostensibly are in some sort of a pause that doesn't really exist, but we'll use it as an excuse to pause ourselves and go back and look at how we got here and see if we can't identify some patterns over the last 39 days. I do want to remind you that thealexjonesstore.com is where you go to support us. And it's so funny because I was always saying this, and now I hear Alex saying it too, where I'm like, 72% off? That doesn't even make sense. How are we giving people 72% off? This is genuinely crazy and irresponsible of us. But hey, go for it. Take advantage of it. I don't know. We're selling it. You might as well buy it. But it's funny because even Alex now is like, wait, what? 72% off? This is nuts. But yeah, methylene blue tincture, 72% off when you sign up for the subscription. You lock it in for life. As long as you stay subscribed, this deal will not last long because it can't. So go now. Take advantage of it. And lock in your ultramethylene blue basically at cost, more or less, forever. Sign up for the regular delivery. And of course, we have a new InfoWars cooler bundle that can be purchased for just $99. It regularly sells for $199.97. You're saving over $100 on this. It's 50% off. VIP members take an additional $20 off. It's the InfoWars Ultimate Portable Cooler. It's rugged, insulated, and built to keep your drinks cold for hours. Plus, InfoWars Signature Edition polarized sunglasses and limited edition InfoWars koozies. And of course, we are not long for this world, so get your InfoWars branded merchandise now while you still can. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. So, where to start the Iran timeline? Do we start it 47 years ago, like so many seem to think that all of this began? Do we start it even earlier than that? Do we start it with the Shah or the overthrow of the Shah, the CIA activity? Do we go back farther than that? I mean, do we talk about, you know, the British Petroleum's involvement in Iran? Do we talk about any of that? Let's just, I guess, for the sake of keeping this an hour, let's just go back to June of last year after Operation Midnight Hammer. They claimed it was a big success, but it changed things. It accelerated things in a big way. One of the things that occurred after Operation Midnight Hammer is that Ayatollah Khomeini removed a restriction he'd previously had on production of missiles, keeping missiles under 2,000-mile range, things like that. Basically said, hey, they're coming after us. It's time to suspend negotiations and just get ready for a war, because they knew it was coming after Operation Midnight Hammer. And so did Israel and America. And so for about 6 months after Operation Midnight Hammer, you had Iran frantically building up their ballistic and drone building, manufacturing, storage, and launching capabilities, while you had Israel and America attempting to foment rebellion inside Iran for the eventual overthrow there. And we know this is the case because even before the Operation Epstein's Fury broke out in February 28th of this year, you had U.S. Secretary of this U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent claiming responsibility for the uprisings that occurred in Iran. So we can go to 206 here on the Iran timeline. Here is Scott Bessent explaining that the, you know, rebellion, the protests and the riots that occurred in Iran, they weren't exactly naturally occurring. They were manufactured by us. Let's watch.
The Treasury, and what we have done is created a dollar shortage in the country. At a speech at the Economic Club of New York in March, I outlined the strategy. It came to a swift and I would say grand culmination in December when one of the largest banks in Iran went under. There was a run of the bank. The central bank had to print money. The Iranian currency went into free fall, inflation exploded, and hence we have seen the Iranian people out on the street. We will continue monitoring all the partners, all the Iranian partners. The good news, Senator, is that we have seen, and we can see it with our fencing.
All right, so U.S. says it caused a dollar shortage to trigger Iran protests. What that means? Well, what it means is that when we then go and say, the Iranian people are so unhappy with their leadership, we must free them, it's completely dishonest because the reason they're unhappy is because of us. So we create the conditions to make them unhappy. And then Israel sends in a bunch of Mossad agents to try to get the protesters to commit violence, or just they just do commit violence against the state security, who then fires back. So then we can say, oh, look, they killed all their people. Now we have to go in to save their people. This is all games. This is all smoke and mirrors. But it's confirmed at this point. And this is why it's worth it to go, you know, back over the timeline, because at the time we could sit here and go, I don't think these riots are real. I think this is Mossad doing this. We could look at the Starlink, you know, things that were captured. We could look at, you know, some of the statements made by Iran that they were accusing them of that. But we didn't really know. But then a couple weeks later, you've got the New York Times and the Times of Israel all reporting things like this. Netanyahu is frustrated that Mossad's promise to instigate Iran uprising has fallen short. So now we can go back and go, okay, during those riots, during that supposed uprising, that was all manufactured. It was manufactured in one case by our economic warfare against them, which, by the way, Scott Bessent was brought in to do. He became an expert at this by working under the world-renowned expert in collapsing economies economically, George Soros. So he was a George Soros employee that was brought into the Treasury specifically to wage economic warfare against Iran to inspire the riots that could then be infiltrated by Mossad to cause the chaos that would lead us going to war. And this is all very sophisticated, but simple at the end of the day. It's not all that complicated. But now we could go back and say, okay, now we know for absolute certain that those riots, the protests, they were fake. They were manufactured. They were outside forces. They were foreign agitators going into Iran to cause the chaos that we could then take advantage of. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu embraced a Mossad plan to spark a popular uprising at the start of the Iran war and is frustrated that those promises have not come to pass, according to a new report. A report in the New York Times published Sunday, but this was back in March 23rd. Citing current and former U.S. and Israeli intelligence officials, says Netanyahu discussed the plan when persuading U.S. President Donald Trump to go to war against the Islamic Republic. And we'll get to that in just a second. But again, all throughout the chaotic time period, here's the New York Times story. Israel thought it could spur rebellion inside Iran. That hasn't happened. Okay. And they'll present this as if it's like, we wanted to help the poor downtrodden of Iran. And darn it, it just didn't happen. No. They wanted to manufacture a color revolution in Iran to overthrow the Iranian government. These are outside forces infiltrating, subverting, and trying to destroy. Okay. Very different, you know, vibe than, oh my gosh, people of Iran want freedom. Let's go help them. Then we're starving the people of Iran. They're so angry that we're starving them that we're going to use that to kill a bunch of them to justify our invasion and overthrow of their government. Totally crazy. And when you get to the numbers that are claimed, that now it's 45,000. I don't know. It was 32,000 for a while. Now it's 45,000. Trump's like, maybe 60,000. I don't know. I can make up any number.
They're all just completely manufactured, okay? It just doesn't exist. They just came up with these numbers out of nowhere. I tried to find, like, where they actually came from, and they were literally just made up. Ayatollah Khomeini did acknowledge that several thousands of Iranians had been killed since protests started in late December among shopkeepers in downtown Tehran before gradually spreading to big and small cities. That confirmation is unusual because Khomeini typically avoids commenting on death tolls during previous protests in Iran over the years, but they did admit to something like 3,000 people dying as a consequence of this. But of course, if Mossad is there arming the protesters, it's kind of hard to, you know, see this as just, you know, the big bad tyrants mowing down peaceful protesters. They weren't. They were Mossad agents, or they were being tricked by Mossad agents into being the useful idiots of an overthrow. So it's like, what are you supposed to do? Let them do that? I don't know. I don't know if Iran killed these people or if it was Mossad killing them to blame on Iran. I mean, it's acknowledged that Mossad was behind these riots. So that throws all everything that we know about it into confusion and suspicion. But basically, they just made up numbers. The latest figures of the widely recited human rights activist news agency based in the U.S. says more than 3,300 deaths have been confirmed and over 4,300 are being investigated. So they say that the official number is 3,300. Meanwhile, somebody just decided to multiply that by 10 and claim that that was the actual number. So these numbers don't make sense. So again, this is all just the groundwork. This is the background, just knowing that the protests were a lie, the riots were a lie, the death tolls were a lie. All of this was a lie designed to convince you that we had to go to war with Iran. So then you get to about a week before the attack happens. About 2 weeks before, I should say. And again, this is why we're going back in time, because at the time we didn't know this was going on. We had suspicions and we could guess more or less that we'd be going to war in Iran. But now we have the actual detailed account of what occurred in the run-up for the 2 weeks before the actual assault on Iran. It, of course, is in a New York Times article called How Trump Took the U.S. to War with Iran. And it talks about Benjamin Netanyahu arriving at the White House just before 11 a.m. on February 11th, the Israeli leader who'd been pressing for months, or you could say decades, for the U.S. to agree to a major assault in Iran, was whisked inside with little ceremony out of view of reporters, primed for one of the most high-stakes moments of his long career. It was just, it's just him versus the President of the United States. Who is going to win the face-off? And of course, it's Netanyahu. Basically, you had everybody involved in the war there. You had General Dan Kane. You had Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. You had Marco Rubio, Susie Wiles, the head of Mossad, and Benjamin Netanyahu. And of course, the way they describe it is Netanyahu's in the center, sort of at the head of the table, with everybody surrounding him. They actually make a point that Trump did not sit in his usual seat at the head of the table, which is symbolic and probably more important than not. The only person that wasn't there at the time just so happened to be J.D. Vance. You think that was an accident? I don't believe you. J.D. Vance was in Azerbaijan, and the meeting had been scheduled on such short notice, he was unable to make it back in time, I'm sure. No, he was deliberately excluded because they knew he wouldn't be down with it, or because they wanted to insulate him from the effects of the war so that they could preserve his political career later. I'm open to either suggestion. In the Situation Room on February 11th, Mr. Netanyahu made a hard sell, suggesting that Iran was ripe for regime change and expressing the belief that a joint U.S.-Israeli mission could finally bring an end to the Islamic Republic. That, of course, was a lie. Mr. Netanyahu and his team outlined conditions they portrayed as pointing to near certain victory. Iran's ballistic missile program could be destroyed in a few weeks. The regime would be so weakened that it could not choke off the Strait of Hormuz, and the likelihood that Iran would land blows against U.S. interests in neighboring countries was addressed as minimal. Yeah. Yeah, what are they going to do? Bomb Qatar? It's never going to happen, right? What are they going to do? Bomb Saudi Arabia? They would never. Well, besides Mossad's intelligence, Mossad's intelligence indicated that street protests inside Iran would begin again with the impotent. Yeah, like we think it's going to begin again as they load their guns, with the impetus of the Israeli spy agency helping to foment riots and rebellion. An intense bombing campaign could foster the conditions for the Iranian opposition to overthrow the regime. The Israelis also raised the prospect of Iranian Kurdish fighters crossing the border from Iraq to open the ground front in the northwest further stretching the regime's forces and accelerating its collapse. But of course, they had no ability to actually bring that to fruition and talk to the Kurds about it at all. They're just lying. This is just a recitation of lies. Mr. Netanyahu's presentations and Mr. Trump's positive response to them created an urgent task for the U.S. intelligence community, and overnight, analysts worked to assess the viability of what the Israeli team had presented to the president. The U.S. officials assessed, the intelligence officials came back the next day with their assessment. They assessed that the first two objectives were achievable with American intelligence and military power. They assessed that third and fourth parts of Mr. Netanyahu's pitch, which included the possibility of the Kurds mounting a ground invasion of Iran. They said these were detached from reality. Basically, as four parts, it was the decapitation, the killing the Ayatollah, crippling Iran's capacity to project power. Third is the uprising inside Iran, and fourth is regime change. So they're like, those first two we could do, but those second two are unachievable. They're impossible. They are, quote unquote, detached from reality. When Mr. Trump joined that meeting, Mr. Ratcliffe, head of the CIA, briefed him on the assessment with CIA that the CIA director used one word to describe the Israeli prime minister's regime change scenario, quote unquote, farcical. At that point, Mr. Rubio then turned to General Kane. General, what do you think? General Kane responded, sir, this is, in my experience, standard operating procedure for the Israelis. They oversell and their plans are not always well developed. They know they need us, and that's why they're hard selling. Mr. Trump quickly weighed the assessment. Regime change, he said, would be, quote unquote, their problem. It was unclear whether he was referring to the Israelis or the Iranian people, but the bottom line was that his decision on whether to go to war against Iran or not would hinge on whether parts 3 and 4 of Mr. Netanyahu's presentation were achievable. He remained very interested in accomplishing parts 1 and 2, killing the Ayatollah and Iran's top leaders and dismantling the Iranian military. General Kane, the man who Trump likes to refer to as Raisin Kane, had impressed the president years earlier by telling him the Islamic State could be defeated far more quickly than others had projected. Mr. Trump rewarded that confidence by elevating the general, who'd been an Air Force pilot, to be his top military advisor. General Kane was not a political loyalist, and he had serious concerns about the war with Iran, but he was very cautious in the way he presented his views to the president. So this is back on February 11th and 12th. They basically make the decision to go to war. And so from that point until the 28th, you can assume that they are prepared to go to war. They are putting things in place, and they are stringing the Iranians along, knowing that the agreement would never actually be finalized or achieved. And again, you can read all of the sordid details in this New York Times article. And of course, a lot of the, take it with a grain of salt if you want. It is the New York Times. And I have the feeling that as this becomes more and more of a political liability, you are going to see more and more people in the Trump administration claiming I was against this the whole time, as we see in the New York Times article. Oh, I told him it was BS early on. But not with enough force or, you know, motive to actually stop it from happening. So from the 12th to the 28th, you have the ongoing Iranian talks. And they've been going on for a while. But of course, they were reaching a climax of one sort or the other. And we were basically told that because the talks had failed, that's why we had to go attack Iran. We didn't believe them, or they weren't giving us anything. Basically, we tried and we got to the end of our diplomatic rope, and so we had to attack. But later, it was revealed that there were British attachés as a part of the negotiations that were there and revealed that Iran actually was willing to give Trump everything he wanted, more or less. Everything that we have now failed to achieve through over a month of war. Things like no longer enriching uranium, or at least promising not to try to make a bomb with it. All sorts of stuff that we claimed we couldn't get. They were untrustworthy. They were intractable. We had to go to war with them to stop their developing their enrichment of uranium. But we could have done that diplomatically. The offer was on the table. But we decided 3 weeks before that war would be the answer. So let's go now to clip 227 here. So this was David Rode posted this, the British attaché, talking about how Iran was willing to give up all of its uranium, which is the goal of all of this, apparently. That's the one persistent goal that's been, you know, talked about by the Trump administration. We have to stop the uranium. They cannot get a bomb. But we could have achieved that 40 days ago with a signature on a piece of paper and a shaking of hands. We went a different direction. That hasn't worked and only made things worse. Here's the British attaché talking about what Iran had on the table when we decided to attack.
Iran offered to give away all of its enriched uranium during the peace talks. And hours later, the U.S. started dropping bombs. And The Guardian broke yesterday that there were British officials, the British National Security Advisor was present in Geneva during that last round of talks. The British were surprised by the Iranian offer. They thought it was credible. They thought the talks should continue. And the British were shocked when the Trump administration started bombing Iran hours later.
Okay, so this whole war was unnecessary. So the ultimate goal of the war that they keep telling us was right there, sitting on the table, ready to be grasped. We chose war instead. So now that goal that was imminently available to us is now farther than it ever has been before as a consequence of this utterly ill-advised and stupid war. Here's Trump making the war announcement on the 28th of February. This is how we learned that we were now in war with Iran. Let's watch.
A short time ago, the United States military began major combat operations in Iran. Our objective is to defend the American people by eliminating imminent threats from the Iranian regime, a vicious group of very hard, terrible people. I'll say it again. They can never have a nuclear weapon. For these reasons, the United States military is undertaking a massive and ongoing operation to prevent this very wicked, radical dictatorship from threatening America and our core national security interests. We are going to destroy their missiles and raise their missile industry to the ground. It will be totally, again, obliterated. We're going to annihilate their navy. We're going to ensure that the region's terrorist proxies can no longer destabilize the region or the world. This regime will soon learn that no one should challenge the strength and might of the United States Armed Forces. The lives of courageous American heroes may be lost, and we may have casualties. That often happens in war. Finally, to the great, proud people of Iran, I say tonight that the hour of your freedom is at hand. Stay sheltered. Don't leave your home. It's very dangerous outside. Bombs will be dropping everywhere. When we are finished, take over your government. It will be yours to take. This will be probably your only chance for generations. For many years, you have asked for America's help, but you never got it. No president was willing to do what I am willing to do tonight.
So that's Trump announcing it on February 28th. He, of course, had decided on this course of action about 2 or 3 weeks beforehand. And despite the willingness of Iran to meet us in the middle on negotiations and end this in a peaceful and diplomatic way, Trump, with the urging and assurance of Netanyahu against the advice of his entire cabinet, decided to go to war anyway. So we'll pick it up there. We've laid the groundwork now. And now we'll pick up on February 28th. And how things went off the rails from there. And so far, I'm keeping track. So far, we've heard that this war is about defending the American people, Iran never getting a nuke, and freeing the Iranian people. How long will these three goals last?
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today.
Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15-20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. Now, I've been telling you this for decades, so they have major studies, but now, here it is. CIA declassified research, the human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information that the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document the potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com if you're a VIP member for 50% off, regular customers 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation, total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you feel in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our Ultra Methylene Blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
So allow me to make a prediction here in my prediction stuff. I'm not Polymarket, I'm not Kalshi, but I'm pretty good at predictions. And my prediction here is that everything that the media is now going to say about Iran's going to close the Strait of Hormuz and energy prices are going to go crazy and all these, none of this is going to come to pass. That isn't to say there won't be a little bumps here and there in the market, and it's not to say one random thing, you know, bad thing might happen to a ship or something like that. But Iran has basically, their military has basically been decimated. So they can keep doing PR stunts and having the second general of the fourth command of the third wing of the Iranian army show up on MSNBC. They can keep do that and make his threats and say, we're going to let things through if we like you and not if we don't. But it just is utterly irrelevant. We are the sheriff.
Yeah, how'd that work out? How'd that prediction work out for you? It's funny. It's very funny. I mean, that was a couple days after the war had started. And, of course, he's saying that Iran is already done. They've been defeated. And they'll never close the Strait of Hormuz. That wasn't my prediction. My prediction was the exact opposite. And it was the right one. So, this is why we're going back. This is why we're going back over the timeline to show you all of the lies that you've been fed, that we now know are absolute lies, incontrovertibly. So, again, to refresh, we put economic sanctions on Iran that are designed to cause pain in the civilian population. Israel sends Mossad agents in to inspire riots and protest and to arm the rioters and protesters and attempt to overthrow the government. There's clashes. People end up dead. They multiply the number of dead by 10 to claim that that's the reason that we're going after Iran. Although in the beginning, as we just heard from Trump, and that was a shortened Trump statement that I edited. Obviously, you could probably see the jumps, but his full statement was about 8 minutes. And I included all of the actual reasons for the war in there, which, according to Trump, are to protect Americans from Iranian attack, to ensure that Iran never achieves a nuclear weapon, and to free the Iranian people who are begging for us to come deliver democracy to them. Now, we know all of that's untrue. And in fact, we could have gotten the enriched uranium through diplomacy. They were ready and willing to negotiate with us, but we weren't interested in negotiation. The negotiation was all a big ruse to keep them in a state of a false sense of security so that we could kill all of their leadership. And so on February 28th, we did just that. And for everybody watching, and at the time, and this is what we said, and looking back, I'm only more and more sure that this is correct, that Donald Trump expected it to be Venezuela 2.0. He expected, he believed the Israelis, and when Benjamin Netanyahu, when he told them, despite all of his intelligence agencies saying that it was farcical, far-fetched, and BS, he believed him. And he thought that they'd bomb him on Friday, and by Monday, before the markets even open, he'd be out there going, we did it. We destroyed the Iranian regime. A new regime is in place, and done deal. Now, this may have been complicated, and it's a little confusing. This is one that's not fully confirmed, but it appears as though there were people that we expected to be able to slot in to basically take over once we killed the higher ups. And it looks like Israel may have killed them at the same time, leaving us holding the bag on Monday morning, leaving Donald Trump standing there going, don't worry, it's going to be like 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks. We planned for this. It's going better than we thought. Now, I don't believe any of that. But it was on the 3rd of March that we sort of first got the real story about what happened. Again, they expected it. I really genuinely think they expected it to be over by that Monday. It would have been the 1st of March, right? No, the 2nd of March. Monday was the 2nd of March. So he expected by the 2nd of March for it to be over. And this is where you see the first example of failure to prepare and scrambling to make up for failure. So they expected this to be a in-and-out miracle worker type Venezuela operation. And when that didn't work, they immediately go to the Kurds. Now, previously, apparently Netanyahu had said that the Kurds would be ready for this, but clearly they had not communicated with the Kurds. And the Kurds basically turned around and slapped their offer right down and said, hell no, we're not going to fight for you. Screw you. We're going to fight against you, if anything. So again, you see this over and over where it's this big mission, big attempt. It's going to be amazing. We're going to decapitate them, put a new person on the throne, and then we'll be done. When that doesn't work, they're looking around going, okay, the Kurds. Oh, well, the Kurds are going to come fight us. They're going to be our boots on the ground. And when that doesn't work out, they come out with the threats again. And when those don't work, they go to the next, attempt to pull something off. It hasn't worked yet. And all of this, again, is indicative of the fact that they were not prepared for any of this. They were not prepared for a 4-week war. They were not prepared for a 6-week war. They thought this would be over in a weekend. And when it wasn't, everything went downhill. And it's been just trying desperately to manage and hide the chaos ever since. And you know that this wasn't a unified and cohesive action, because on the 3rd of March is when you had Marco Rubio and others admitting that this was all for the sake of Iran. Now we already, for the sake of Israel, rather. Now we already know that Israel promised Trump that this would be successful. Israel was pushing for this. Israel was the one starting the riots and encouraging, all of this, and also committing genocide in Gaza, which is causing the fight in the first place. And so it wasn't exactly a surprise that this was happening. It was shocking to hear somebody in the government actually admit that this is the way things went. Let's go to that classic video that will live in infamy, since it was Marco Rubio, Secretary of State of the United States, accidentally telling us the truth. 303, this is Marco Rubio.
The United States conducted this operation with a very clear goal in mind. I haven't got a chance to see a lot of reporting. I don't understand what the confusion is. Let me explain it to you, and I'll do it once again as clearly as possible. Perhaps you'll report it that way. The United States is conducting an operation to eliminate the threat of Iran's short-range ballistic missiles and the threat posed by their Navy, particularly to naval assets. That is what it is focused on doing right now, and it's doing quite successfully. I'll leave it to the Pentagon and the Department of War to discuss the tactics behind that and the progress that's being made. That is the clear objective of this mission. The second question that's been asked is, why now? Well, there's two reasons why now. The first is it was abundantly clear that if Iran came under attack by anyone, the United States or Israel or anyone, they were going to respond and respond against the United States. The orders had been delegated down to the field commanders. It was automatic, and in fact, it bears to be true, because in fact, within an hour of the initial attack on the leadership compound, the missile forces in the south and in the north, for that matter, had already been activated to launch. In fact, those had already been pre-positioned. The third is the assessment that was made that if we stood and waited for that attack to come first before we hit them, we would suffer much higher casualties. And so the president made the very wise decision. We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties and perhaps even higher those killed. And then we would all be here answering questions about why we knew that and didn't act.
All right, so there you go. Rubio suggests U.S. strikes on Iran were influenced by Israeli plans. In other words, we were forced into it because Israel was going to attack Iran. We would receive the backlash. Instead of trying to restrain Israel, we decided to go all in. Now, of course, they tried to walk this back, but not before confirming it multiple times. Of course, Trump tried to go the opposite direction. We, of course, now know that, you know, this is not true. It was, in fact, Israel that, you know, was going to launch the attack and forced our hand. But, you know, Israel's never had a better friend than Trump. And here he is, claiming to have forced Israel's hand, taking the blame for this utterly devastating war. Let's go to the next clip here.
Mr. President, did Israel force your hand to launch these strikes against Iran? Did Netanyahu pull the United States into this war?
No, I might have forced their hand. You see, we were having negotiations with these lunatics, and it was my opinion that they were going to attack first. They were going to attack if we didn't do it. They were going to attack first. I felt strongly about that. And we have great negotiators, great people, people that do this very successfully and have done it all their lives very successful. And based on the way the negotiation was going, I think they were going to attack first. And I didn't want that to happen. So if anything, I might have forced Israel's hand.
Okay, so at the time that this video came out, you may have believed that. You may have thought that was true. We know now none of that was true. We know he decided on February 12th that these negotiations would never be concluded. He had no reason to believe, oh, because of these negotiations, Iran is going to attack us. Iran was giving them everything they wanted, but they decided 3 weeks earlier to go to war. J.D. Vance, vice president, came out trying to, you know, put a good face on this and say, no, we didn't expect this to be over already. We expect this to last for a while. Let's go to J.D. Vance again on the 3rd of March.
The United States has a lot of optionality here. And, you know, we could go for a little bit longer. We could go for a lot longer. But I think the president just wants to make it clear to the Iranians and to the world that he is not going to rest until he accomplishes that all-important objective of ensuring that Iran can't have a nuclear weapon, not just for the next few years, not just because we obliterated Fordow or some other enrichment facility, but because the Iranians themselves commit long-term to not building a nuclear weapon.
So there was Operation Epic Fury in full swing. So J.D. Vance, again, doubles down on the idea that this is all about stopping Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. But if you go back to that Rubio clip, he introduced two other goals that haven't been mentioned up to that point, which was destroying their ballistic missile capability and their Navy. Okay, so that makes five total goals so far, which is defending the American people from attack, never letting Iran have a nuke, freeing the Iranian people from the despots who control them, destroying their ballistic missiles, and destroying their Navy. Now, they may have come up with these two last goals after realizing the other goals are unachievable and knowing that they already pretty much did the last two. So maybe that's how it worked. But again, it wasn't just Marco Rubio and everybody else saying that this was Israel doing it, which is anti-Semitic, by the way. I don't know if you know this. According to the Times of Israel, saying that Israel dragged the U.S. To war isn't just wrong. It's anti-Semitic, according to Shlomo Levin, who must be Mark Levin's alter ego or something. I don't know his real name. We're not sure. But yeah, it's anti-Semitic, apparently, to understand the process by which we were driven to war by the despicable Jewish state of Israel. Let's go to clip the next one now, 304. This is Mike Johnson, again, admitting, saying, revealing, slipping. I don't know what you want to say, but confirming, once again, this was for Israel. Let's watch.
To me, the most critical point is that this was a defensive measure, a defensive operation. And why is that? I took some notes, and this is not classified, so I'll tell you what I think is important. Israel was determined to act in their own defense here, with or without American support. Why? Because Israel faced what they deemed to be an existential threat. Iran was building missiles at a radical rapid clip to the point where our allies in the region could not keep up. As you know, Iran has long vowed to take out Israel, wipe it off the map, and they have long seen that.
Yeah, so we get it. It was about Israel. I mean, it was about Israel. It was about Israel. It was about Israel. Everybody knows. I'm just letting you know in case you got people out there. Ah, Israel's not dragging us into this. Literally everybody said it. You just don't have a memory that goes back a month, I guess. And it was on the 6th of March that Donald Trump, I guess, was, I don't know what's motivating this, but came up with a new end to the war, came up with a new goal that we were trying to achieve, a new military objective that would define our operation there. Unlike any of the others, let's go to clip 306 here. Trump saying what he demands from Iran to end the war. Let's watch.
Simple words, a very simple, unconditional surrender. That means I've had it. Okay, I've had it. I give up. No more. Then we go blow up all the, all the nuclear stuff that's all over the place there.
Unconditional surrender. We're a pretty far away from that. But as of March 6th, that was the demand. Unconditional surrender. Okay? Just letting you know that the ever-shifting goals that were put forward by our leadership. We go to the next clip here because, again, this is Trump, even though previously he said he forced Israel's hand. Kind of not the truth. Let's watch.
All of this money is to make sure they never go nuclear, they can't hit us with ballistic missiles, and they stop terrorizing the region. When this regime goes down, we're going to have a new Mideast. We're going to make a ton of money. Nobody will threaten the Straits of Hormuz again.
We're going to make so much money, you guys. The money's going to come rolling in. Of course, now here we are, a month and more later, and the Strait of Hormuz is closed with no sign of it opening. We can go to the next one. Here's Trump again, letting it slip a little bit.
Years they've been killing our people and killing people from all over the world, and I think we have great support. And I think if we didn't do it first, they would have done it to Israel and give us a shot if that was possible.
Give us a shot if that was possible. So again, he's like, well, they were going to attack Israel, so we did it first. So it's just over and over again. It's been reconfirmed continuously. This was for Israel. So speeding up here, just to try to get to the end, because we're still very much early on. But as of February 28th, U.S. and Israel forces launched nearly 500 strikes in the first 12 hours. Iranian missile and air defense sites, command centers, nuclear-related facilities, et cetera, et cetera. Civilian casualties included 170 to 180 killed when a missile hit a girls' school in Manab. Additional strikes hit other places, including some of the nuclear sites, as well as residential halls and a residential zones and a sports hall. Then Iran retaliated, launching 170 ballistic missiles, thousands of drones at Israel, U.S. bases, and the Gulf states. Strikes damaged airports, ports, hotels, and refineries. Debris and intercepts caused additional casualties. Iran effectively began disrupting the Strait of Hormuz basically that day. Israel then called up its reservists. You had cyber attacks on Iranian infrastructure, and a state of emergency was declared in Israel and the Gulf states. Then for the first few weeks of the conflict, you basically have back and forth escalation continuing with heavy U.S. and Israeli strikes targeting air bases, hospitals, command centers, and Natanz nuclear facility, with Iranian retaliating across the region. Civilian deaths mount. Interim Iranian leadership, a council was formed with Mujtaba Khamenei, later elected supreme leader on March 8th. And it continued We can go skip down now to 3:10. This was on the 10th of March, where Trump was certain that we'd already won the war and we were just going to wrap it up pretty soon now. Let's watch.
Thank you, Mr. President. On Iran, you called it an excursion. You said it would be over soon. Are you thinking this week it will be over?
No,
are you talking
but soon.
About days?
I think so.
Okay, and with respect
very
to...
Very soon.
We can go to the next one here. 2 days later, he reiterated, it's not only over soon, it actually ended the first day. Let's watch.
Well, it's only good if you win. You know, you can only... And we've won. Let me say, we've won. You know, you never like to say too early you won. We won. We won the bet. In the first hour, it was over.
Yeah, kind of. But, you know, that was a month ago at this point, and here we are in a worse position than ever. We can go to 313 here. This is Secretary of War Pete Hegseth saying that no need to worry. The Strait of Hormuz will be opened by America in no time. Just calm down. Let's watch.
And as the world is seeing, they are exercising sheer desperation in the Straits of Hormuz. Something we're dealing with. We have been dealing with it, and don't need to worry about it.
Don't need to worry about it. You don't need to worry about it at all. You don't need to worry about it so much that it's not even really close. The Strait, it's not close. Let's go to the next with Pete Hegseth here, 313. Pete Hegseth says that the Strait of Hormuz is actually open, you guys. Let's watch.
The only thing prohibiting transit in the Straits right now is Iran shooting at shipping. It is open for transit should Iran not do that.
Got it. So the Strait is open. You just might be hit with a missile if you go through. Totally makes sense. Again, are you getting a picture of just like the chaos, the lack of direction, the flip-flopping, the completely unachievable goals that then have to be replaced by goals that shouldn't even exist because the Strait of Hormuz was open before we started this conflict? Are you understanding the stupidity that we have been led down? And everybody who has listened to these lies and believe this crap is responsible for the fact that we are now, at this point, pretty much losing a war against Iran. Then you got a pretty big deal here, probably the biggest deal of the entire conflict, 3:19, a few days before, around the 16th or 17th of March, Joe Kent, the head of the National Counterterror Center, resigned in protest of the Iran war. The next day, he went on Tucker Carlson and said this about who controls our foreign policy. Let's watch.
And I think this speaks to the broader issue. Who is in charge of our policy in the Middle East? Who is in charge of when we decide to go to war or not? In this case, with what the secretary described and later on the president, later on the speaker of the house, and the way the events played out, the Israelis drove the decision to take this action, which we knew would set off a series of events, meaning the Iranians would retaliate.
Again, we knew. We knew this would not go well. We knew Iran was lying. Israel was lying to us about how easy this would be. We knew that the Strait of Hormuz would be closed, even if Dave Rubin was lying to you about it. We knew. Everybody knew. But Joe Kent asked a very important question there. He asked, who controls our foreign policy? Well, clearly Israel does, from everything that we've seen so far. But the real question is, why? For what? Why are they getting us into war in Iran? Why did they want to start the riots? Why did they use the American treasury to create the conditions to overthrow the Iranian government? Of course, you don't have to wonder because Benjamin Netanyahu has told you over and over. Here's a speech from the 13th of March where he lays out why America got into war in Iran.
We are in historic days, days that will be written in the annals of Israel. In Operation Roaring Lion, our war is going and intensifying. We are pummeling the Islamic regime in Tehran. We are pummeling its emissaries, Hezbollah in Lebanon. There's unprecedented coordination between Israel and the U.S. and achieved substantial achievements that are changing the reality in the West Bank, in the Middle East and beyond. These achievements are increasing the status of Israel as a superpower more than ever. Through our power and as in opposition to the power of our enemies, this is what is ensuring our survival. Our threats come and go, but when we become a regional superpower, and in many respects a global superpower, we have the power to push away threats and ensure our future. In 1993, I published an article in one of the newspapers in which I wrote, the biggest threat to the state of Israel is not in Arab states, but it is in Iran. Since then,
all right, so that's why it's so Israel can become a superpower on the world stage, a regional power uncontested in the Middle East, and a superpower the equivalent of China or America as they seek to supplant America by using us to go to war with Iran. That's what all of this has been about. So again, they lied to us to get us into this. They used us to create the conditions to fool Trump into thinking that this was possible. When it turned out it wasn't possible, we've been now drawn into a quagmire that, according to Benjamin Netanyahu himself, is all in service of building up Israel as a regional superpower. It's not anything to do with benefits for the American people. And so for the entire month of March, it's just a continual back and forth, you know, game of battleship with missiles flying from Iran to Israel. Then you get to the last week of March. The last week of March is when I think, out of sheer desperation and, you know, an unwillingness to admit they were wrong and back off, I believe they attempted to launch a ground invasion, a miniaturized ground invasion to seize the uranium stockpile. That completely failed. You had the story about the fallen pilot and the rescue mission. And immediately after that, you have Trump issue the threat to totally obliterate the entire civilization unless they open the Strait of Hormuz. They refuse to open the Strait of Hormuz. Trump backs down anyway, agrees to this 10-point peace plan that they don't actually agree to. Israel immediately breaks it by bombing Lebanon. And now here we are, Strait closed, billions of dollars spent, dozens of people dead, entire bases obliterated. Iran more extreme, less inclined to participate in any sort of oversight of their nuclear program. Absolutely everything has gotten worse, and the fault can be laid firmly at the feet of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, and Donald Trump himself for falling for their lies, as well as, of course, all of the quislings and sycophants online that believe all of the lies and, you know, try to discredit you for disbelieving them. And so I believe that all of this, I mean, it's been this continual process of making these big claims, trying some major this will end the war adventure that fails, rinse and repeat. I don't know how we get out of this, but one thing is certain. We have to decouple from Israel. We have to restrain Israel. And if we really want peace in the world, we have to destroy Israel. We have to arrest the leadership, convict them in war crime tribunals, dissolve the state, and establish a multi-faith republic. That needs to be the future of Israel. Shouldn't exist.
In a world where globalist, depopulationist, principalities and powers of the air have been adding, spraying, and inundating humans with heavy metals, chemicals, and toxins, TheAlexJonesStore.com would like to introduce a new way to remove them from your body from the inside out. Introducing zeolite. Zeolites are a group of crystal-like porous minerals that are found where molten stone meets water. From the Greek zeo, to boil, and lithos, or light, meaning stone, this unique network of tiny little holes and channels found in zeolite absorb and remove harmful substances like heavy metals, chemicals, and other toxins. So don't delay. Start the process of removing unwanted toxins from your body and put some skin in the game of the info war today by going to TheAlexJonesStore.com and picking up a bottle of zeolite.
We'll be right back. Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.